Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit in creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. You are going to love her. Her name is Jane Marla Robbins, and she's the author of this book, which we're going to talk about a lot. So I'll just give you a little background on Jane. She was commissioned by the Kennedy Center to write and perform the one-woman play Reminiscences of Mozart by his sister. Jane also performed it at Lincoln Center. A poetry grant finalist from the National Endowment of the Arts, her books include Poems of the Laughing Buddha, Dogs in Topanga, performances of that on YouTube, and the award-winning Acting Techniques for Everyday Life. Welcome to the stage, to the studio, Jane Marla Robbins.
Too bad we're having fun. I'm sorry. What a great intro. That was me. I'm always surprised by my life. I thought it would be one thing. I'm sure no one can relate to that, right? And
right.
Then it turns out to be something else. And I get to meet you. A total surprise and joy. Here we are. Surprise.
All right. Now, this, you said, was your sixth book?
Yes.
Wow. So look at her. Look at this. This is Jane. When you read this book, you will just, you'll know her by the end, because she takes a pretty terrible situation, and she calls this my medical, hysterical, poetical, comical 25-month memoir, and it's Myasthenia Gravis, the musical. And it is a musical. Why don't you tell them what was happening? Let's just get it over with. When did this Myasthenia Gravis, like, how did you know you had it? How did it show up in your life?
One day, out of seeming nowhere, I start seeing double. I know this isn't good because I'm in a car. So I go home.
And you were driving?
Exactly.
Oy.
I was driving. So luckily I was close to home. I mean, God is generous in his own joking way. I get home. I went to an ER because a friend of mine's husband is a doctor. Apparently this is not normal. Yeah. They did not have a specialist for eyes there. It all seems so random, but ultimately ends up with a book that's helping people and me. I'm sure writing the book helped me.
Yeah.
The ENT said, "You're seeing double, stop making jokes." I made that part up.
Oh.
"This could be serious, Jane. Go see my ophthalmologist." You get to say all these fancy five-syllable word.
Five.
Yeah, five. So five is my lucky number. I go see this jerk. I'm just kidding. That's another story. And he takes a blood test, which is one way, apparently. I mean, he was at least intuitive enough to think, maybe this is myasthenia gravis. Trust me, I had never heard that word in my life. And he said, "Here's the name of a specialist."
Had he seen it before? Is that how he knew to test for it? Oh.
Because apparently very often the first symptom is this vision problem. So it advanced into triple vision, Picasso vision. If I had that horrible symptom now, you would have eyes as if Picasso painted you, and maybe a head or two coming out of yours. It was upsetting. So then I went to the specialist.
So did you go home that day?
I did. I don't think I drove.
Going to say, how'd you get there? Yeah.
That I don't remember. It's funny about trauma. You don't remember the worst. It's not that I have made a joke out of every horrible thing that happened in my life. But all I know is when I met my present doctor, Buxton, he said, well, you can't go anywhere because your immune system is not going to be there to fight for you against germs and viruses. So,
wait, how soon after the double vision was that?
It was all kind of.
That's a song. Weird. Do you know that's a song from Foreigner? Double Vision. Oh, okay. Because every time I say it, I think of the song. I think it's Double Vision. Anyway, I'll look at it.
I'm writing Triple Vision. I'm writing. And the rest.
You could have put that song in your music.
I could. It's not too late. I have a terrible feeling, and that's a terrible thing to say terrible. The musical will get done. It'll be expanded so it's an hour, because right now it's probably not. The Manhattan Theater Club actually considered it. And the progress of this disease, this great gift with so many lessons for me. I don't have the same energy I used to have. So for me to produce this play and be in control, I mean, why write it, care about it, and have so many people write me to say they feel so much better, even their illness, having read this book. It's very important to me. Thank you, by the way, for providing a place for me to know my own thoughts, because I was kind of beating up on myself. Why don't I get it done as a musical? And those are the reasons, because I care so much about this proper lesson being given to the world so that people really get it, so that people are laughing and the moments that are serious are spoken with whatever they're supposed to be spoken. I know how to direct, so that you keep the audience interested and you kind of slip in the serious part when they're laughing, because as one of my favorite acting teachers used to say, he keeps the class laughing because the truth is a difficult pill to swallow. So when our mouths were open, he'd pop in the pill of truth.
Wow.
So that would be my job as a director. I'm taking notes on this.
All right. Well, you can watch this, so you don't have to take notes.
Oh, good. All right. I'm a compulsive writer, but there you go.
So am I. I'm taking notes as we speak.
Oh, good. Good.
Truth is a difficult pill to swallow. Okay. So can we just track you back? So you had the double vision. Somehow you got home. You went to the – someone did a blood test. They figured out you had this.
Myasthenia gravis. Right. Hard to pronounce.
Myasthenia gravis. Okay.
Right. And did they really have to add the gravis? It isn't serious enough, because here's what happened. I went to my old homeopath, who, along with the ultimate primary physician I had to find because mine has retired, he said, I don't know anything about myasthenia gravis, but here's a treatment that can't hurt you. And the next day, proving he knew absolutely nothing, I was in the hospital with the following symptoms. I could not open my hand. I could not lift my arm. I could not chew, me who loves food.
Oh, wait, what treatment did he give you?
I don't know, little homeopathic this, some magnets that, acupuncture points, couldn't hurt me.
And it made it worse?
So significantly worse, I was in the hospital for 12 days.
Did you tell him?
Yeah, but he wouldn't acknowledge it. And I'm not mentioning his name, but to put it on the air is to caution everyone that this is a very tricky disease. And even the primary care physician, I once got a cold and she's like, oh, I know you have, your immune system is suppressed. Quick, take an antibiotic. She didn't know there was a list of antibiotics which are counterindicated for my disease. It's a tricky disease. Perhaps it's a metaphor of our life. Life is tricky. You don't always get the first correct answer. The body is a mystery, right?
I know you're a snowflake. Got that one. But what does it do? Like, what is it attacking?
What normally happens if, say, I want to chew. I love to chew. The brain says, she wants to chew. The nerve that controls the muscle for chewing says, hey, chewing muscle, chew. Only when this immune system that has been attacked by the myasthenia gravis committee, the muscle never gets the message, so it can't chew. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, there is a receptor on the muscle. I don't want to get too technical, but that's what it is. And I'm so proud of myself that I actually explained this because it took me a year.
Yes.
Because nobody is clear. No one is clear. The way nobody knows what to give you, antibiotics, how bad could it be? I'm telling you, it was not thrilling. But it wasn't horrible. It wasn't like the homeopathic acupuncture remedy, which landed me in the hospital. But if I had not been in the hospital and exposed to such medical insanity, I would not have written that book, which is helping so many people. You don't know how the world works.
Right.
Right.
But you know, in part of the book, you're saying, you know, this one's telling you to take this, this one's telling you to take this. So they obviously didn't know anything.
You just mentioned the word snowflake. I'm not sure your listeners, hearers, viewers know what that means.
Right,
a snowflake disease, and there are not that many, thank goodness. It means no two cases are exactly alike. So you can be a genius doctor, but you don't know what to give the next patient because just because medicine A worked on 500 people, this will be a different case. So every doctor was saying, take this medicine, take this medicine, take another medicine, smoke marijuana, don't smoke marijuana, do this, don't. I mean, it was endless. Hot baths are bad for you. Well, if you have no symptoms, it's okay. I mean, it was like being in a house of mirrors, but I got through it. I actually worked in the circus, so I guess I was prepared, but I was just a clown for two performances. Got to make them laugh. Made the children laugh. Nothing makes me happier.
So how many years ago was that?
Which? The circus or the myasthenia?
The what? When you first had the symptom? Like, I'm just trying
three
to...
Three and a half.
So that was... I can't even do the math. We're in 2025.
Whatever the book says. The book says...
21, like 2021. Okay. So you also had COVID going on, right?
Yes. So I had actually... for some reason gotten very, very scared of COVID because I'm over 60, way over 60. And an acting teacher once said, I listed some perception of mine. I said, God, that really sounds paranoid, doesn't it? And he said, oh, you need a little paranoia to be a good actress. So COVID, paranoia, no paranoia. I stayed inside. In all fairness to the doctor who gave me those horrible treatments, he also shared with me at one point, because I was crazy enough to go back to him one more time, because a friend of mine was sick and I wanted to introduce him. He pointed out that isolation, which is what I had given myself, and I live in a very isolated community. Isolation basically dries up your serotonin. And we need serotonin to get our immune system working. So here I was with a immune system disease, and I was not giving my immune system what it needed to be strong. So I have since realized, there's a cafe 4 minutes from here. There are humans there. I can have human contact. But it took a long time, and still the doctors don't want me going anywhere inside without a mask because of germs, because presumably my immune system is so traumatized or suppressed or whatever. On the other hand, your viewers will be surprised to hear that I've been speaking to my immune system, but that may be a little woo-woo for them, so let's not go there. Yet,
I like woo-woo. Woo-woo.
Well, this is way woo-woo, but it's based on science.
Yeah.
There was a Dr. Symington in Los Angeles who got cancer. It was very bad, and they wanted to keep him in the hospital and give him chemo, radiation, blah, blah, blah. His name, Norman Cousins. And the doctor said, I'm going home. Can I say the F word on your show?
Sure.
Well, he probably said, fuck you, I'm going home.
You're quoting someone, so it's fine.
Oh, good. That's right.
My father would say, it's fine. So
what would he say? No, what would your father say?
Well, if I was upset,
damnation.
No. If I was upset with someone, he would say, fuck them. And I was like, Okay. So, I mean, not like the actual act, but that he would say that. So I
I'm
say,
sorry to hear
well,
that.
to quote my father, fuck him. So go ahead. You're
So
quoting
here's what
someone.
this genius did. Somehow, his intuition and creativity, which I've been thinking a lot about because I looked at the questions or issues you may or may not want to address today, said, you know what? I'm just going to go home, A, where he's comfortable, human contact, serotonin, but also I'm going to watch funny movies. The cancer disappeared. Okay. And then there's Doc, that's Norman Cousins. Dr. Symington was dealing with a lot of cancer children with cancer. And somehow his genius was to say to these children, and there's, by the way, at UCLA, there are buildings devoted to the science behind both of these people's discovery having to do with imagery. Because actually, when I think about it, funny movies are a visual art form. Yes, you can have jokes, but a lot of pratfalls, a lot of, I mean, it's visual as well as auditory. Symington was purely visual. He had those little kids visualize in their bodies Pac-Man eating away their cancer. And guess what? Cancer gone. Huge percent. I don't remember the percentage. But somehow, after I was trying all these medicines that were making me angry and sick, and you name it, I thought, well, if it worked for these two guys, why don't I give it a try? So I visualized my immune system. And there was this army of antibodies attacking with their swords. But since this was my visualization, I could choose anything. I didn't use Pac-Man. It wasn't a
Right.
funny movie. I saw these priestesses with white robes, and they had shields that every time, finally, the spears were thrown, they bounced off the acrylic shields. And suddenly, this army of antibodies that were attacking me is exhausted because the So finally, one of the priestesses said, maybe the head priestess, gee, you look really tired. You got to, you okay? No, they were tired. Were they hungry? Yes, they were hungry. So this chief priestess says, well, what do you want to eat? Why? I gave her that script. I don't know. I'm a playwright. And this general of the antibodies says, steak and asparagus. I tried it. What did I have to lose? Nada. I immediately felt better. And I'm doing asparagus and steak 3 times a week. Now, is this going to work for everybody? No, neither the visualization nor the diet.
But wait, I'm confused on the antibodies were the bad guys?
Yes, those are the bad. That was my sick. I visualize it as I have a healthy immune system. And then there are the guys that have been attacking my muscles
Yeah,
and
so the
nerves.
priestesses were good, the
They were good.
antibodies were bad. But if they wanted steak and asparagus, why did you give them what they wanted? They were the bad guys.
Because they were now realizing they had lost the battle.
Okay.
They were exhausted. The priestesses had won with a, who knows how these things
But
come
you
to
felt,
mind.
but no, you know what? I've been doing this energy stuff because, well, I'll tell you a funny story. I was having, it's not funny, but I was having a lot of leg pain. And I used to have this guru who used to say, pain is a message from the universe. It's you, and you're not listening. So I was like, so I have this spirit guide that I got in some tarot card reading. I call her Wilma, and I'm like, Wilma, what are you trying to tell me? And what she said was that I was too like close-minded. I was stressed out because this is the way it had to be, and I wasn't open. And I was focused on what wasn't working. You know, I was so stressed out about work and everything. So okay. So then I said, okay, I'll be open. So I'm reading this book about manifesting. So I get what you're saying about the visualization. You know, it's a 400-page book. He's going to be a guest on my show. But I also came across, you know how something comes across your screen? And it was this thing from Mindvalley on duality with Jeffrey Allen. So I was like, all right, bing, bought it. And I've been doing it, and it's all about energy. And so there's you got your root chakra, right? That's like around your butt, and you're supposed to ground into the earth. So it's like there's a stick or a cord coming out of my butt, like going into the earth. Like, all right, do you know what I mean? It just sounds odd, but okay. So I'm doing it, and you go down, and then the healing energy comes up from the earth, and it does your bottom half. And then today or yesterday, we were doing the other energy that comes through your head down to here and back up, right? And people have gotten better. So you know what? Whatever works. I don't think it's too woo-woo. Whatever works, baby.
But that's what people need the courage to trust. Because, yeah, you know, I could well have said, as many of my uptight dear classmates in New York would have said, what, are you crazy? I just did it. And then,
right. And who cares? You know what?
I went to a number of doctors, and one Looney Tunes actually said to me, you should be eating steak. So I got a confirmation. You know, the rest are all salmon. Salmon's good. But, you know, Pac-Man, it's think outside the box.
But that's what it's like, the energy, you know, like, because I'm sitting there lying in bed doing this thing going, I don't get it. You know, I'm not doing it right, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, hey, you know what? Just go with it. He's like, don't try to do it right. Just, you know what? If you can just visualize, you're just visualizing it. Is that real? And then you do this thing with this energy ball. Have you done that?
Not yet. No.
So you go like this. Go like this. Take your hands and just keep
going. It feels familiar.
And you feel like tingly.
Yes. I remember this.
Yeah, and then you take it.
33 gurus later, I remember this.
Yeah, you take it and you put it wherever, or you could do it on other people. And I'm like, but you know, you do feel it. So, because if there's all this energy around and
we're made up, it's energy. It's energy. And what we don't see is the primal energy that has our cells dancing all the time. If that isn't an energetic move. And you know, it's interesting. You mentioned my book, maybe you didn't, Acting Techniques for Everyday Life.
Yes, I did.
20 years it's been selling on Amazon.
Wow.
And in it, there is an exercise. Okay, and I did my 6-part prep because this is a performance. I have to be smart. And the book describes about 45, even if you're real, it's hard, right? Because we're taught not to be real.
Yeah. And we are real. We're being real.
We're being real now because, bless your heart, that's your show. Right. But still, it's an effort because out in the world, it's not always safe. That's why your show is so important.
Okay, well, let's take that apart. Can we take that sentence apart?
Happy to.
Okay. Because I get it. When I was thinking about it today, when I did my very first YouTube in 2019, I was like, like, to press the button, it's like, I felt exposed, you know, like.
That's right.
But nothing happened, you know. And so really, like, if you look at it, like, what was going to happen? Someone could say, like they did years earlier when I tried something, you can't say that. Take it back. Delete it. And that's what I was afraid of. But nobody said it this time. So if you say, okay, let's just look. You being your real self, what's not safe about it?
Like, well, it depends on the person. I know my history made me feel that when at 3 and a half, I was this charming girl full of light and blonde, crazy hair and already creative and extraordinary, I was molested by my grandfather. So in my wiring is, if I'm shining, it's dangerous. And at this late date, I realize I sometimes have that wiring. You don't know what's going to trigger it. With right. all the techniques that are out there, many of which you know I have tried, it's still there. And maybe it's still there just so I can help people and remember that truth, that it may not be gone forever. That if the wiring is there, it's a reminder. And maybe it's a blessing. To say it's safe to shine because yeah. so many people are afraid of it because someone's going to pay attention to them, and then it could be dangerous. They could be raped or whatever the issue is. So, and being real, my goodness, we have parental voices at home.
Wait, you were, hold on. I'm just going, this is just sinking in. 3 and a half, your grandfather molested you?
A whole summer. I was with
at
him.
3 and a half.
So that's very early imprint.
Yeah. But I mean, what is someone doing with a three? You know what I mean? Like, obviously that's a something going on, but a 3 and a half year, it's not like you're developed. It's not like you're.
Everybody has their preferences, as we were saying.
Okay. Did you have siblings?
Yeah, and that's how I repressed it, for those of you out there who think nothing happened. 27 and even later are good ages, because it's too pain. He was the hero of my entire family. He brought over 12 brothers and sisters from Russia. He set them all up in business. This is the last person anyone would say anything against. Who would they believe? Not a 3 and a half year old. Who suddenly, miraculously, probably put on 20 pounds that summer being alone with grandma and grandpa. Chocolate is a great painkiller. You feel nothing. You're just on a high. The serotonin goes through the brain memory. And my parents weren't sophisticated enough to realize, just made my mother angry. Although, in fairness, she said, well, I didn't want you to become a klutz like I had become. So she sent me to Martha Graham's dance school, and that probably saved my life. Because suddenly, it's not that I re-owned my body, but I moved it. And the dance was a healing medium, I'm sure, for many, many years. And there's a whole chapter in the Maya Senia Gravis about my relationship with Martha. But that's, I also have something to add about your legs, which is in the book, Acting Techniques for Everyday Life.
Oh.
I mentioned there's a 6-part preparation, the obvious physical warm-up, a vocal warm-up, an emotional warm-up, a mental warm-up, a spiritual warm-up, which you included. And in the physical, I include an exercise, and it's feel your body. Do you feel pain anywhere? It's just the exercise you got, without the energetic component. Okay, let's say you have pain in your hip. What's the message? Can you give it an image and have it talk to you? It says, maybe it says slow down or whatever the message is. But yeah, we're not crazy. The body speaks in whatever language, energetic, visualizations, poetry, friendship, love.
Wow.
Healing is everywhere, everybody. Like,
yeah.
I went to a dinner party, a birthday party with healthy people on Saturday. And there was a man there who I thought was awfully cute, by the way. Fingers crossed. And what do I know? And I had brought my dog, which your audience can see or not see. But this man said to me, you know, your dog loves you so much. And that idea had not been in my head. And we know how important love is. And I was suddenly taking it in from my dog. I mean, what's odd, there's another book of mine called Dogs in Topanga. Mm-hmm. My last dog, after she died, I wrote a poem. And I realized when she was in my lap, going to the hospital, and she would die mercifully before she got there in my lap, she looked at me with such eyes of love. And I realized I had never believed that she loved me. She had been abused. She was odd. She was gorgeous, whatever. But we don't know where the love comes from. Jesus loves you, somebody said to me once. And I'm like, wow. And I felt the love from that person come to me. And I understand why people need to believe that. If there are not enough sources, or not belief, or not enough receptiveness to receive the love that's out there for us, it could be anywhere. It could be from someone you just met doing an interview with you, or someone who you've just met, whom you're interviewing. I love you.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I could go down so many different tangents right now, but you know what? Let's take our commercial break and then we'll come back and we'll talk some more.
Oh, goody.
Yeah. I'm like, my brain is in too many places to come back.
I'm ADD, in case you didn't notice. Okay. We'll advertise ADD later.
Yeah. All right, good. All right, we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
And thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you want to connect more with your children, or if you're a teacher and you want to have your children behave better, KikoriApp.com it's a platform that allows, it's got activities where they play, connect, just like you saw on the commercial. I don't have to repeat it. But anyway, it's really cool. Go to their site and request a demo, because it works. And if you don't think your kids are talking to you, you can do these activities at home and get them back connected. Really, it's like magic. Okay, and then my books, as always, we have this one. If you find yourself on the dark side of life and you want to have more fun, it's got tools and techniques that I discovered my own self. And then this one is called Real Talk. Before I got real, I didn't really speak because I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony. I'm fine. Thought I was fine. Learned how to speak, developed a getting real process for you and other people who may not be able to speak either. And then this is my very first book, The Second Piece of French Toast. If marriage was my dream, why was I numbing myself? So anyway, that's this. It's a very courageous book, and it's a great story. If you need a summer read, go get it or give it to a friend. All right. And now we're going to bring back the lovely, marvelous Jane Marla Robbins. Okay. So I know you were a dancer. Okay. Well, where do you want to go? You want to go to your book? Do you want to go about
First,
your dancing?
First, I want to congratulate you on your 3 books.
Oh, thank you.
And I know what that is, because all 6 of my books, but maybe I'm twice as old as you, who knows?
I don't think so.
They have the same message. Somehow there are techniques either literally explained or clear from how one is moved by a poem, for example, or, as I said, patience with myasthenia gravis, write me to say how much better they feel upon reading the book.
Wow. How do they find it?
It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. The books are everywhere. All six books are everywhere. Just look up my name, three names.
But like how, if someone, if I guess if they had the disease and they were Googling it, they would find your book that way, right?
That's Strangers. Right. I know the Myasthenia Gravis Foundation, which does some very good work.
Oh, okay.
They'll do a story, and who knows? Where was I the other day? Oh, my doctor, the one who never heard of MG and didn't know anything about it. I called for some advice the other day, and she said, you know, I recommended your book to somebody because my dance teacher, her husband just got myasthenia gravis. So we got him the book. Mm. So you, one doesn't know. And somewhere you trust the universe, somewhere you trust a press agent. Sometimes you just write another book, which is what I'm doing, and I hope you're doing. And I didn't even know about your book, so I'm going to go and get them. It's an act of courage, and I have the same people-pleasing history, because we were saying it's not only incest that makes you afraid to shine and speak up. It's the parental voices punishing you if you're anything but, yes, mommy, yes, daddy. So it's a real thing. And for women on top of that, to the husband, the role that we've seen in movies for decades. Yes, darling, what do you need? Oh, what a good wife. End of story. So, yeah, I can't wait to see your books.
Oh, thank you. Now, okay. Let's go back to the love thing. Did you have a thing when you were young that you weren't loved?
Of course.
Of course. I mean, I did.
Next.
I don't know if everybody does.
No, everybody doesn't.
They don't. Okay.
I mean, I was engaged almost to a man who, his mother was so endlessly, everything he did was right, and he happened to be a very brilliant mind. He believed her. He believed he was lovable. They're out there. Not you and me. Never mind.
But that's why when you experience it, you're like, whoa, oh, I am lovable, right? It's like a shock.
Major shot. I hope you read the book in Dogs in Topanga.
Okay.
It's the last one about my dog, Camilla, after she died. That may be the title, but it's the last book about her. And then the next dog is Dancer, the one who this lovely man told me loved me. And it had never occurred to me to look there. And probably it's the same with going to the cafe around the corner. Somebody said, yes, I'd love to go to the... All right. ADD, let's stay on track. Here's a track. Here's another book I wrote. We are laughing so much, I think it's important to honor my book called Poems of the Laughing Buddha. First of all, to let your viewers know that though four of my books include a lot of poetry, and this one is all poems. I write very accessible poetry. What matters most to me in life is communication. Mm-hmm. God bless the poets who write that I do not understand. Mm. And that's why a lot of people now like poetry. No, yes. So it's probably prose written in different lines so I can see it better, whatever the reason. Okay, so there is the book in Dogs in Topanga about the other dog who only when I was writing a poem did I realize from the last look she gave me before she died that she loved me. Hmm. It takes as long as it takes. And I know when I coach people, all I do is feel love. I do is feel love. And, you know, I don't have the degree. I kept trying to get it, but then I was... ADD'd away by, I have to write a play about Martin Luther King, which may be made into a movie, by the way, next year. I know. Ultimately, looking back, it was more important because all my shrinks kept saying, Jane, you get these remarkable results so quickly. Why would you go somewhere and have them, you know, change anything you're doing? All right. Lost my concentration.
Oh, all right. Well, I know you were a dancer. And then just tell, and it was probably in the book, but just how did you get into acting? Because so many people want to get into acting and they don't. Like, can you mind telling that story?
Yes, yes. What about, I'm in my mother's womb. And she says, I want to name the child, if it's a girl, Jane Marla Robbins. It's a good name for an actress.
Mm.
End of story, Hillary. That's it. I was desperate to please my mother for 50 years. And then I woke up and like, you know, this isn't really either fun or gratifying. I'm not learning from it anymore. And I was writing.
Acting?
Yeah.
From acting?
Oh. And I was, a lot of the time, my need to perform or clear something, which is what writers very often use their writing for, it wasn't working. I mean, the last play I wrote for myself, I mean, I would produce, and they were so far out or so, and I had to star in them. I mean, they wanted Academy Award winner, whatever her name is, Redgrave, Vanessa Redgrave, to play my role in Jane Avril about the dancer who danced in Paris at the Can-Can. And then finally, the metaphor, I think, for all of us. Everyone was doing the Can-Can, da-da-da-da-da. And then one day, maybe it was Toulouse-Lautrec, I don't know, in my play, it's Lautrec. He says, he sees her doing her own thing. And he said, you know, you should do that at the Moulin Rouge. And she became a star. And I think that's everyone's path, right? I'm doing everybody's dance. I'm doing what everyone else is doing, whether it's people pleasing, blah, 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 blah. What's my dance? And then you shine, because we're talking about daring to shine. She became a star. That was fine. I got to dance. And that.
But you wrote that.
I wrote it for myself, and I wouldn't even let it go to Broadway with Vanessa Redgrave starring. I had to dance because my mother wanted me to be a star actress because she had probably wanted to be one, blah, blah. And then she was jealous on top of it all. I mean, our lives are complicated, but
But so when you could have gone with Martha Graham, and it was in the book, and your father said, absolutely not, and he sent you away, Switzerland or something, but then... You ended up dancing anyway, right? You ended up dancing with her anyway, which is amazing.
My soul is like a diamond. It had to be expressed. Some seeds, however demolished they may seem in the earth, they have a life and a message, and they blossom. Mm. And so I gained a lot of weight in Switzerland, and I was embarrassed, ashamed, mortified to go back to the Martha Graham School and dance. So I didn't. I ate chocolate. Then I went to college, and the physical ed was, did I want to take a dance class? I thought, well, better than basketball for me. And it was the same beginning of the class that Martha had done, that I had done so many years ago. Anyway, so I danced in college, but it was too late to become a dancer. And I became an actress, which I had been doing all along anyway for Mother. And
like, where had you been doing it all along? Acting.
Camp. Even at my high school, all girls high school, the Shakespeare play, Richard II. I was Richard II. A performance, by the way, no one has forgotten who saw it. This is many years ago. So camp, I was Malvolio, I guess. Another all-girls camp. And I got laughs. I'll tell you, there is. And then when I went to college, I went.
Where did you go?
Bryn Mawr. My mother wanted to
go. Oh, Bryn Mawr.
Are you getting a pattern here?
Right.
Bobby says, Janie does, right?
Right.
So I was quite proficient in the piano because my parents, I had to know all the arts. By the time I was 17, I spoke 5 languages. I played the piano, ready to marry John Rockefeller, J. Rock. My father had a Rockefeller picked out for me.
Okay.
So... Unfortunately or fortunately, my piano playing was so good, everyone thought I might become a concert pianist. So the next thing you know, I go to Salzburg to the famous Mozarteum to get a teacher to teach me piano. Short version, went back to college where I didn't want to be in a room alone playing the piano. Isolation, current theme.
Mm.
And instead, there were freshman hall plays. And there was one by Noel Coward. Hillary, I got a laugh on every line. It's the best drug there is. Who says that? Billy Crystal, somebody. laughter, and I was going to talk about my book, Poems of the Laughing Buddha, and you and I know how important laughter is.
Mm-hmm.
I was hooked. And then I was getting a lot of applause. So I was in like a dozen plays in college. There was a gasp from my class when I graduated magna cum laude, because they knew I never went to classes. I was always in some theater, University of Pennsylvania, Haverford, didn't matter where, had to do that acting. But
I went to University of Pennsylvania.
You're kidding. Mm-hmm. Did you see me? No.
Yes, I remember you.
That was it. The German. I did the Goethe play, Faust. Yeah. Right. It's a nice feeling. And then I was on the steps of the library. Then I was in South Philly to shoot the Rocky movies.
Oh, yeah. What part? What part were you again?
The pet shop owner.
Oh.
I know. It was very sweet.
So was it easy for you to get these parts? It seems like it was like effortless. Like, did you ever struggle? I mean, you made your living that way, right?
I don't know. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. When it was really hard, I thought, what else can I do? And I had, for my first womanhood show, I had gotten such a rave in the New York Times. And I had played 45 characters in a journal from the 18th century. I mean, again, everyone thought I was going to fail. And we got a rave review with a photo, unheard of. I was an unknown. They wouldn't let me join the union until I got this rave review, and then they were going to picket my show. I mean, I've always had to do it myself one way or another. Once in a while, the universe said, okay, here's a surprise. And maybe I was in Beverly Hills. I don't remember why. All I know, I was hitching as an actress, because I didn't drive when I got out here in 75. Oh. And some guy picked me up. I trusted my intuition. He was safe. And he was an agent. And he said, have I got a role for you? I said, okay. So he meant the lead in Rocky, for which, of course, Stallone was smart enough to pick Francis Ford Coppola's sister, Talia Shire, who did a brilliant job, and I adore her. However, there was the role of the pet shop owner. It turns out that the one woman play I had done 6 years earlier in New York, the director of Rocky had seen in New York. He offered me the part without an audition.
Wow. And were you in every movie?
3 out of 5.
Wow.
Sweet. And he was a good man. God rest him. You get to be a certain age, all these geniuses just drop like flies. I miss him.
How was, I used to work at the movies. That's how close I got to acting. Candy Girl. But Rocky was the movie, the first one. I mean.
It's a classic. It's iconic.
Yeah.
It gives.
How was he? Was Sylvester Stallone nice?
Oh, totally. Well, remember the first film. Oh, and I think I was dating the director by then, so he had to be nice to me. Who knows? I thought he was really nice. He's really smart. And there's something about professional respect. Mm. Once you're an artist, it almost doesn't matter how cuckoo crazy, even mean that person is.
Mm.
There's a respect for talent. Maybe it's a respect for one's own, for the miracle of talent. So I respected him. He directed a movie after Rocky One. It's brilliant. Oh. And he didn't, Paradise Alley never got an Academy Award. And then he went into the muscle building roles. Mm. I mean, he was a brilliant director. He knew just what he wanted on Rocky.
Was that his first movie though?
Not.
Are you talking about the director or Sylvester Stallone?
It was, both of them had done good work,
okay.
But Sylvester, who wrote Rocky,
yeah,
insisted on playing the lead, so big studios would not give it to him.
Mm.
So they knew he was an actor, but not good enough or not name quality. And John Avildsen was just a genius who had done, I don't remember what,
mm-hmm.
but he got attached. But when I said that about him being a brilliant director, because eventually Stallone got to direct some mm-hmm. more of the Rocky films, Did John do the last? No, I don't think so. I think Stallone did. I don't know. No, John did. Anyway, my point being, it's this one iconic scene in the pet shop. And the director had said to me, Jane, as you have to be really mean so that we have total sympathy for, you know, the one who ended up marrying Rocky.
Yeah.
So short of putting cigarette butts out in the fish tanks, we start filming. And I mean, Stallone stops shooting, calls the director over. Why is she so mean? He didn't want me so mean. The director said, don't be so mean. Now, I'd probably worked with 10 coaches. I'm exaggerating. To be really mean. Now, I have to change directions. I didn't know what to do. I'm saying this for the power of trusting your instincts, however cuckoo, because that's how we started this interview. Mm-hmm. I saw some birdseed. I put it in my hair. And here's this crazy woman in the scene shaking her head to try to get out the birdseed, I guess. And I became a character. So thanks to Stallone, thanks to Avildsen, who knew I could do the role, having seen me act in a one-woman play about an 18th century uptight, people-pleasing, best-selling novelist from 1776. Life, you don't know how the curves occur. Mm. What's the end of this curve? And when I need to remember that. I too, and I think that's why the Myasthenia Gravis book is doing so well. I admit despair, and I admit hope, and at the end I'm so much better. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, yeah, I fall down. Oh, I'll never get up. Guess what? I get up. And just this, those words, I've never used that metaphor. You never know what's around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, it seemed like writing it gave you humor in a pretty, confusing or demoralizing situation. Like the writing of it, I mean, I'm assuming that kept you going.
And I did it without thinking because I was so in shock with the symptoms. What do you mean? I can't chew, but I could write. And that was always my go-to. And I just did it. And it amused me. So I'm laughing. And ultimately, to my surprise and delight, people are reading the book and they're laughing. Because first, I thought, this is an insane thing to do about a life-threatening illness. What are you doing here? And then people said, it's hilarious. I laughed out loud. Really? An acupuncturist, not the one who landed me in the hospital.
Yeah.
Not somebody I use anymore. I'm not into the needles anymore, but I was for years.
Wow. Well, all right. We have 3 minutes left, believe it or not. So for anyone who knows someone with this disease, buy it for them on Amazon, right?
Or any autoimmune disease or any disease where the doctors are not sure of what to give you because it's emblemic of our medical profession. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're not. And somehow to go with grace into that dark forest and trust you'll come out the other end into the light.
Yes, okay. And then if you like her book, you can read her other 5, all on Amazon as well. And what else would you like to leave people with? What message?
I kind of like the last things we were dealing with. There's always something around the corner, so don't give up. There's so many ways of saying that. And then just to honor my conversation with you, our last interview, and the title of my book, Poems of the Laughing Buddha, why it's important to somehow trust that laughter will also be a tool of healing. I mean, again, there's an entire research building at UCLA that has figured out when we laugh, and now we're talking very seriously, but when we laugh, there is a chemical that the body produces that actually strengthens our immune system so that we are stronger, so that we are stronger, so that we can deal with whatever challenges are coming our way. I don't know why something dinging when I thought I turned it off, but maybe it's a sign that I'm supposed to be quiet.
So, but also what you said about isolation causes stress.
And it causes the blocking of the production of serotonin, which is our, again, it's tied into the laughter. Serotonin is the same as pleasure, but if you don't have serotonin, the immune system will not function.
Mm.
So you're really hurting yourself if, what was the word you just used? Oh, human contact. Human contact, the two isolation. Of us, or what we just said.
Yeah, isolation, yes.
The isolation versus the human contact, which inspires your body to produce this bizarre, fabulous neuro, whatever it's called, chemical, mm-hmm. which actually strength, even smiling to a lesser degree.
Well, you know what? If I do a fake, if I'm not feeling it and I do a fake smile first, then somehow I can smile because it's funny.
Act as if by my acting book, not you. You don't need it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jane. This was so much fun.
This was so much fun.
I just so admire you and love what you do for the world, make us laugh. And thank you for being so real.
Thank you for being so real. Here's to real. And there's the laughter. Yes. Here's to real laughter or fake. Just do it. It'll go.
Yes. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.